quite one-fourth, and never just half, but the entirety of one primate, whole. It is the part of a story, an idea that means more to you than me. Hello and welcome to Full Gorilla Life. We are Jeremy Keene,
Larry Medina,
and Corey Hewlings.
Each week, we will break down an important life concept or talk with an inspiring person so that you can live your full gorilla life.
All right, everyone, welcome back to our podcast. Today in the studio, we have Daniel Wall from CBS 12, investigative reporter. And before we get to know Danielle and hear her life story, we're going to go into the gauntlet here with Corey and Danielle.
Danielle, welcome in.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. A little nervous about the gauntlet.
All right. Married, single, or dating?
I am engaged. So soon to be married, about a year away.
A year? Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, you started to share a little bit before we started recording here. So you said you're a year away, but you're starting to plan already.
So we were actually supposed to get married this summer, and due to the coronavirus, we had to postpone. We had to push out our wedding for an entire year, and it was very dramatic and very difficult to do. We have been engaged since 2018, and we've been together for almost 7 years. So to say that I'm ready to be married is an understatement.
So now, did you have a problem getting refunds on anything?
Thankfully, all of our vendors were so understanding about it. And it was just let's find the date that works for everybody and reschedule. So I'm so grateful. You know, that's the silver lining out of all of this was everybody was understanding, our guests totally understood, and just fingers crossed that 2021 is a better time to get married, because I can't imagine doing it now.
Absolutely.
I'm with you.
Do you have any children?
No. Hopefully someday, but not yet.
Okay. I'm already drawing a blank. No, I got this. Okay. My go-to is, what was your first paying job?
Oh, so I worked at the Chick-fil-A in my local mall, and I wanted to have a job in the worst way. I just wanted to earn a paycheck. So I applied, I think, when I was 14. So whenever you are legally allowed to apply for a job, I got my application in. And so I'm a relatively tall woman. I'm close to 5'9". And so my height is relevant to this story, because they needed somebody to dress up as the Chick-fil-A cow, and you had to be a certain height to fit into the costume. Yeah. So that was one of my first paying jobs, was, dressing up as a cow and handing out free chicken in the mall.
So this is at 14?
I think I was 15 at the time, and I worked there for several years, and humble beginnings.
Okay. Did you like working for Chick-fil-A?
I loved it. I am obsessed with their food. I never got sick of it. It's just the best. I have cravings. Yes. I loved Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. I feel like that would be my biggest problem if I worked there. I would eat there before I got my shift in.
Yeah.
And then in the middle, and then I'd have to take something home.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It would be a big problem.
Yeah, I could eat it every day. I never got sick of it and just absolutely loved it.
Yeah, during this whole virus, me and my wife, we went a couple months without eating out, no takeout, no nothing. We just were eating in the whole time.
We're cooking. I don't know how you did it.
And I asked her, I was like, what is the one thing, what is the one restaurant? And we were both yeah, it's got to be Chick-fil-A.
Really?
Yeah, that's Chick-fil-A, 100%.
Wow, yeah, it's a loyal following. So, there's something about it, something about that chicken.
It's good.
What's your favorite genre of music?
So I'm going to sound like a very stereotypical girl, but I love Lady Gaga. I love Taylor Swift, that kind of music. And, I like to say I listen to a little bit of everything, but it's very heavily Lady Gaga right now. So she's my go-to.
So is it all top 40, or is it really just Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift?
I think at the risk of sounding really old and old-fashioned, I think the top 40 nowadays is not very good. So I really have a few artists that I'm really dedicated to. And I have to say, I listen to their albums nonstop. So that's what I'm listening to.
I can understand that. Yeah, I get behind I Stay Out Too Late, you know, or the Taylor Swift song.
It's a good song.
I'm going to I'm gonna let you know Larry's dirty little secret. His go-to right now is Lizzo. Okay? That's his go-to right now. Okay.
She's so good. And I'm a flute player. So the fact that she works her flute into her music, it's just like she's everything. I love her.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. Like, I saw her bust out a flute in a live performance. I was like, wow.
I know.
Okay. All right. I can get behind this too.
Oh yeah. She's amazing. She's like, she gives me so much life. So she's another one.
Yeah. You know what? She might start going on my running playlist. Yeah.
Oh, she's not already on there? I can recommend some good ones. Yeah. She's got some really
good ones. Typically I do podcasts, but
you run to podcasts?
Yes.
And audiobooks.
And audiobooks. I don't know how he does it. Like,
That's weird.
It puts me in a different spot. Like, I'm not even running. Like, I'm in the book. So I'm just like, it just makes it,
You're just zoned out. You're listening to the book. Wow. Yeah. Well, I can't do that. I've actually tried to run to podcasts, but I find that I can't keep track of both things at once. And I'm music all the way. It's got to be pump up music, high tempo.
So that's the way my wife is. Me, I can listen to any music. It just has to be music. It doesn't matter to me. It could be slow. She's like, how are you running that song? I'm like, I need something in my ear. Yeah.
I've got to have like fast paced music that pumps you up.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
Favorite movie or book?
So I don't have a favorite movie. I really don't. Like, I'm not the kind of person who watches movies over and over again and has a favorite. And this might sound weird, but like, honestly, most movies kind of bore me. I don't have a very long attention span. And so I find most movies to be hard to watch. So I'm pretty strange in that regard, I know. I've seen a few movies that I really like. I just don't have like that one movie that I love. I know that's
weird. Do you watch more shows?
I do. I watch shows. I mean, as long as they're under an hour. I mean, once you get beyond an hour, you kind of lose me.
I can see that.
But it has to be like a really, really good show. Like extremely compelling that you can't turn away from it. I mean, I've seen a few movies lately I've really liked. I saw the movie Parasite after it won.
How is that? I want to see that.
So good. It's just amazing. You have to see it.
It's on Hulu right now.
I think so, yeah. And you have to read the subtitles because it's all in Korean, so you have to really concentrate. But it is a phenomenal movie, so I highly recommend that. And I think you asked me about my favorite book. You know, like many millennials, I grew up on Harry Potter, so I got to go with Harry Potter. I mean, that was like my childhood, my adolescence. Like every year was like a new Harry Potter. So
okay.
Now, what do you think of the Fantastic Beasts series?
I haven't read it.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I just... Yeah. You know what? You're right. I don't think they're books. They're just movies.
I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, I'm kind of like a, you know, original Harry Potter purist. So you can't really mess with like the original.
Well, now that you're here, you got to go to the Universal Studios.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And get the butter beer. It's non-alcoholic. Yeah. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah. Have you tried it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Larry's household is a very big Harry Potter household. Like,
oh, nice.
There's multiple wands floating around the house somewhere.
There is. Yeah, they're floating.
Wow. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live in West Palm Beach, not too far from work, so short commute. I like that. But I live right near the Fit Team ballpark where spring training takes place. So that's pretty cool that we can walk to a ball game, you know, when there is baseball again, we can walk to go see a game. It's a nice little area.
Now you said you just moved. Where'd you move from? Was it out of state or in state?
Yeah, I was living in Portland, Maine. I lived in Maine almost 7 years. So
are you going to miss those winters?
No, not at all. You know, I miss some things about New England for sure, but the winter time, it was so cold and so gray and so long that it just sucks the life out of you. So yeah. I don't miss that one bit. But yeah, no, I lived in Portland, Maine, which Portland is an amazing city. Highly recommend that you check it out if you ever get a chance. Amazing restaurants, really beautiful, funky city. But yeah, I just felt like it was time to move on and experience a different part of the country, a bigger city. And so that's what brought me here.
Okay. I've only been to Maine once. We hiked Cadillac Mountain to see the sunrise.
Yeah, and, beautiful.
What town am I thinking of that's right there? Where the
Bar National Harbor. Park is? Bar Harbor.
Yeah. So yeah. We camped outside of Bar Harbor for a couple
of
days.
Is it said like that or is it Bar Harbor?
Yeah, I mean, it's really said like that. No, that's not a joke. Yeah.
But it is a beautiful part of the country for sure.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do the cold weather though. I think it was middle of summer when we were there. We were on a road trip and I think at night it was still like 60 something degrees or something. I was like,
I know, which to a Floridian is like bone chilling, right?
Yes,
I mean,
it was cold.
So funny. One of the first signs that like we weren't in Maine anymore and we were down in Florida was we saw a forecast and the temperature was going to be below the 70s and the weather forecast graphics had little penguins with snowflakes and it was like, it's going to be cold, you guys. So that's when we knew like we are not in New England anymore.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah.
What kind of car do you drive?
I drive a little white Ford Focus. I've been a Ford person for as long as I've owned a car. And, you know, I'm not one of those people that really cares about cars. I think that a lot of people in Florida care about their cars a lot. I've noticed that, like, people drive luxury vehicles and maintain their vehicles. I'm just not one of those people. I just don't care. So
yeah, we just had somebody on that lived in New York most of his life. And he said that, you know, when he moved to Florida, he got a nice pickup truck. But in New York, he said, you don't have a nice car because it's just going to get dinged up. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And for me, I just want to get from point A to point B. And like, I'm just not a car person. Cars actually really intimidate me and frustrate me. So I just try to like keep it simple.
Now, you said you're a Ford person, though. Was like your parents Ford people?
Oh,
like,
yeah. My dad.
Okay.
My dad was a huge Ford person. And I'm not actually sure where it came from. My dad's huge into NASCAR. And he always loves drivers who drive Fords. Okay. And I just remember growing up, he had signs like in the basement that said, I would rather push a Ford than drive a Chevy or something like that. Like, it was just like this huge Ford bias that I don't know. Yeah. It was like ingrained. So it's all I've ever driven.
I gotcha. Yeah. And that question's in our gauntlet mainly for people like that, because I'm a car guy, you know, I build hot rods and like, but I'm a Chevy guy as well. So like,
okay.
There's a lot of bow ties in my house, but that's mainly why that question's in the gauntlet.
Interesting.
What favorite type of food?
Ice cream all the way. I would eat ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's just the best.
Ben and Jerry's?
Oh yeah. I mean, Ben and Jerry's is good. I love just like a good peanut butter ice cream.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, just something rich and creamy. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Have you been to Savannah?
No.
Okay. All right. I was going to ask you, there's a Ben and Jerry's and then there's Leopold's. Now,
okay.
We went this last January for a bachelor party, me and Larry and a couple other of our friends, for one of them was getting married. So we drove to Savannah and stayed a couple of days. And Leopold's always has a line around the block. Me and my wife love Savannah. Like every time we go, I want to get Leopold's because I also love ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
So we go get Leopold's. It's probably the best ice cream on earth. And Larry's like, yeah, but Ben and Jerry's is better. It's down the road. Now, this is how I can tell you it's not better when you go there. You don't have to wait in line to get Ben and Jerry's. You have to wait in line to get Leopold's.
It's all about the cult following, you know?
Yeah, there's a reason
for it.
Yeah. I think I would honestly, like, plan a trip to Savannah, like, based on your recommendation for that ice cream. Like, I would plan a
whole...
journey there just to try it because I love
Savannah,
ice cream so much.
Savannah is just absolutely spectacular.
Like, I've heard it's really awesome. Yeah, yeah, it's on my list of places to check out for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not too far of a drive even for you. I mean, you probably get there 5-6 hours.
Like, yeah, if we speed, which is something I tend to do. So.
And last but not least, did I skip anything, Larry? Besides
you did.
One?
So reservation or just walk in?
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Reservation for sure. It's like too much anxiety, like just walking in and hoping that there's a table. Like I like to pick the restaurant, know what's on the menu, have an idea in my head and like know that there's a table waiting. It's okay. too much stress to leave it up to chance.
Okay. All right. I can appreciate that. That's not me, but I can appreciate that.
All right. So we'd like to hang out with you because then you take care of all that and then we just roll in with you.
Right. Yeah. You just ride on my.
Yeah.
On your coattails. Your planning coattails. Yeah.
Yeah.
And beer, whiskey, or wine, or none?
Out of those choices, I would say wine for sure. I'm just not a huge like alcohol fan. I don't like my drinks to taste like alcohol. Does that make sense?
It does.
I like fruity drinks. I like fun cocktails. I like margaritas. But I cannot drink whiskey. Cannot
Understood.
Even smell it. Like it's just
Did you have a bad experience?
I've had like several bad experiences. I keep trying it and I keep thinking, oh, well, I'm older now and I'm more sophisticated and I can handle this. And it's like every time I'm such a baby, like I can't drink it. So
that's great.
Yeah, that's all right. You know,
At least you didn't give up on the first time. Listen.
I'm not a quitter.
And you might try again.
Sure. Yeah. No. So my fiance actually just spent a ridiculous amount of money on really high end tequila. Was it tequila?
Okay.
And
is it Dragones?
It was Don Julio. Tequila. It's from like 1942 or something. And I'm like not the kind of person who drinks straight alcohol ever. And he poured a little glass. He's like, "You're not gonna like this." I'm like, "Well, I'll just give it a try." And I tried it, and it was amazing. Like it was so smooth. It was so good. I'm like, I think this is what alcohol's supposed to taste like. Like, I think this is what I've been missing. So I think that's going to be my new thing is just purely drinking like the most outrageously expensive alcohol that there is.
Okay.
That's the secret.
That is a secret. I'm with you on
this.
Do it right.
Yeah.
It's awesome. All right. Yeah. No, that's it. That's the whole gauntlet. So you did really well, you know,
made it.
All right.
Yeah.
So Danielle, so you're an investigative reporter, for the area. And what made you go into this path?
Well, you know, journalism and particularly broadcasting was just that thing ever since I was little, you know, how you kind of imagine, you know, if I could be anything when I grow up, if I could do anything, what would it be? And it was always a broadcast for me. It was always a news anchor or a reporter, a correspondent. So that was just always the vision that I had. And I just never really entertained doing anything else. So I just kind of went full steam ahead pursuing that goal and broke into the industry as what you would call a general assignment reporter, which is, you know, doing one story a day, whatever the news of the day is, you know, that day's shooting or that day's weather event or whatever the big story was. And so I did that job for 7 or so years and just kind of moved up the markets. So that's what you do in this industry. You start really small in a small town, you get your first break. And then if it works out, you just keep moving to bigger and bigger cities, bigger and bigger markets. So that's what I was doing slowly but surely. And then I just kind of reached a point where I said, I feel like I've kind of reached my potential in this realm of reporting and I want a new challenge. And so for me, that meant pursuing investigative reporting, which I think of as kind of like a higher level reporting. It requires much more effort, much more time, and it's much more difficult. So that's kind of what kept me going. And I just felt like it was time to challenge myself a little bit more. So that's what got me pursuing this.
Did you have somebody who inspired you?
Yeah, I think a lot of different people inspired me. I can't really point to one person, but I think just, you know, very strong, authoritative women, smart women on the news that I would see, whether that was local broadcast, national broadcast. I just always thought, you know, that's how I want to present myself. That's who I want to be. I want to be that in charge, strong woman who knows her stuff and who is impactful and makes a difference. And so that's what I've always tried to emulate, is just being smart and self-assured and confident. And that's what I've always tried to do.
Now, did you go to college for journalism?
I did. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I went to Syracuse University, which is pretty well known for broadcast journalism specifically. We have a lot of really well-known alumni. So when I got in, which I didn't even think I could get in, like I applied to a number of different schools. And then when I got into their program, I was just like, I have to go because I'm in. Like I would be crazy to turn that down. And so I went to Syracuse and it was, you know, everything and more. It was a great experience. And what I loved about it was they did not sugarcoat it. They told you right off the bat, look, you're going to work crazy shifts. You're going to move far away from home. You're going to make no money when you start out. They really were realistic about the industry because it's not glamorous at all. And it really weeded out the people that maybe weren't in it for the right reasons, who thought that this was a way to become famous, who just wanted to be on TV. So they really, you know, prepared you for this job. And I'm so grateful for it because, you know, you just kind of jump head in and you know what you're up to before you kind of get going in the career.
Now, what year did you graduate from Syracuse?
2011.
Okay. Now, even since 2011, do you think the news has changed a lot? Like as far as like podcasts and YouTube, you know, how many news, you know, shows you can see on YouTube and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, just looking back on when I first started in the industry, it's so funny to think about because back then, like we didn't even really have Facebook pages. Like we just like, you know, it was kind of like an option. It's like, hey, there's this new thing we're trying. It's called a Facebook page. So I really saw kind of this transformation from the traditional, like the 5 o'clock broadcast is the most important thing you do, to now it's the digital product is the priority. And you think in terms of getting it on the website quickly, you do social media in addition to the broadcast. Like I've just seen it change so much in terms of your workflow, in terms of your priorities, in terms of kind of how you present yourself, because you're not just a figurehead on the TV anymore. You're a presence on social media. You have to kind of let people into your life a little bit and let them know who you are and what you're about. So there's just so many changes. I mean, it's just rapidly changing. But one good thing that I think is that people have an appetite now for kind of more investigative journalism because it's so easy to get like the facts of the day based on what people are posting about on social media. Like any person can go out and take a picture of a fire and you can find out if there's a burning building on your street based on what you see on Facebook. But you need an investigative reporter to dig deeper into the issues of your community. So I feel like there's kind of a revolution towards that. There's a more of an emphasis on doing stories that matter. And I really love that. But, you know, social media and all the things that come with it have created a lot of challenges too. So, you know, it's the good with the bad, but it is constantly changing and nobody knows what the industry will look like a few years from now, just for that reason.
Yeah, it's constantly changing. Now, what do you think of, like, you know, to your point, right, where we do want more investigative reporting because people do post all kinds of stuff, but then there's a ton of misinformation. Like, how do you think that people could help themselves into knowing, hey, this is valid, this is not valid? Because there's almost too much information to where people, it's easy to get confused, right?
Yeah, that is like the number one question, because it's everywhere. I think that people need to emphasize and invest in local journalism first and foremost. I think that they need to subscribe to their newspapers. They need to get to know their local TV stations because it's the local journalists that I think you can trust the most. We don't have this agenda that I think a lot of people accuse national outlets of having. And we're in this community with you. We care about this community too. And so I think that you should be able to trust us. That's obviously a really self-serving thing to say, right? It's like, support me. But I really do think that local journalists are the most trustworthy out there. And I just think people need to stop reposting memes mindlessly and like getting their information off of Facebook and those kinds of things. And it's kind of a daily struggle. When I see people, friends and family members that share misinformation, I feel like it's my duty to let them know, like, what you are sharing is wrong. And, you know, a meme is not a good place to get your news. So it's a daily struggle. And I think it's just up to all of us to just be smarter about it, be better about it, and really double check information because you are responsible for what you share. and you need to be educated about where you're getting your information and not just like blindly accept everything that you read on the internet, because chances are, you know, you may not be getting the best information.
Yeah, I think even beyond that, I think just blindly accepting the headline too.
Yeah.
I see a lot of that. Like, they take the headline as the news and then they fail to read the whole story, you know? And, you know, people, you know, because we're in that headline news cycle too, that 24-hour
clickbait
news cycle that everybody, that clickbait, because everybody wants that traffic, you know? And then, like, a lot of times I read the article, I'm like, oh, that's what they really meant. Like, that that had nothing to do with the other thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it can be hard to kind of capture a nuanced and, you know, developed story in a headline. I mean, headline writing is really hard. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage people to actually read the story and give it more than 10 seconds of your time. And, you know, just be invested in your community. Get to know what's going on and stop watching cable news all the time, because that's not the best representation for what's going on.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And if people did watch more local news, they probably wouldn't be so upset all the time.
I tend to agree with that. You know, I think that we actually make a daily effort to tell stories that, you know, of course, you're going to have your sad story of the day, your crime of the day, but we do make an effort to tell stories that are positive, too. So I think that if people, you know, really paid attention to what was going on in their community and kind of tuned out all the noise and the talking heads and the pundits, you would have more reasons to be hopeful and happy about your community.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, I agree. Because it even goes, like, not to get into, like, politics, right? Because that's not what we do here. However, me and Corey, we talk about this all the time, where if you do want to make a change, typically your best way to make a change is to do it locally, where you live. You know, if you want to get involved, I would say get involved with your local, you know, politics. So I would say it would be the same even for news reporting.
I agree 100%. 100%.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to, you know that the, you know, your local reporters are reporting on stuff that not necessarily is big news. So they don't have to be, you know, have an agenda. Like you said, they don't have to have an agenda. You know, they're not trying to get a million clicks. They're trying to get the clicks in the community that count.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we're accountable to our neighbors. And if we get a story wrong, like that will follow us. We can't just, you know, burn bridges. And so
I reacted the next day.
Right. And so, you know, we care about the same issues that you do. And so I just wish more people realized that and, you know, kind of viewed it that way. But, you know, that's my new journey.
As far as my ignorance on the subject, now you're an investigative journalist. Do they give you what to investigate all the time, or can you pick your own topic if you have like an idea or something that you want to investigate?
It's a little bit of both. You know, we're constantly pitching ideas to our editors, and our editors make the final call. And sometimes our editors have an idea about what they would like to see covered. So it's definitely a collaboration. You know, I have some stories that I want to do. They have stories they want to see the newsroom do. So it's always just up for debate, and every story is wildly different. Like every situation is so different, so it's hard to say, you know, it's always this process. But yeah, it's a little bit of both.
So is this the first time you've been an investigative reporter?
Yeah, it's still a relatively new role for me. I started this about a year and a half ago, and I still feel like I'm constantly learning on the job. And I have a lot to learn. I'll be the first to admit that, but It is a great new challenge. I'm absolutely loving it. And it's really cool to just see change that you helped create, like tangible changes in the community. It's very, very satisfying.
Now, have you ever been out in the field and like felt like you were in some type of danger being out? Like all of a sudden, like you see like maybe a crowd or something, right? Because you're at a scene and you're investigating, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe this isn't so good.
Yeah.
But have you ever felt something along those lines?
Yes. It doesn't happen all the time, but yeah, quite a few times, in various situations. In one case, I was reporting in very rural Maine, and I was trying to knock on the door of somebody who was accused of a crime, and they, you know, had a lot of signs that said, you know, about, you know, not welcoming people. I'll just put it that way. They had a really large dog that they Unleashed. You know, that was really scary. And then, you know, I've covered really big, intense protests where people have said things and approached us and touched us in ways that made me really uncomfortable. And, you know, we had gone on a kind of an undercover sting operation recently with an undercover police, undercover agent, I should say. And that was probably the most recent time I felt really on edge. You know, you're kind of always looking over your shoulder, like, where am I? Who's around us? You're just very aware of your surroundings. So those are a few that pop into mind, but they're all very different from one another. And it's not like, you know, just going into a bad neighborhood makes me nervous. It's just all dependent on like the story that I think,
and
you know, who you're going after, I guess.
Now, how exciting is it though?
It is an adrenaline rush. It can be crazy, especially if you're doing what's called a confrontational interview, which is when like you are going after somebody and they're not expecting you, and you show up with the cameras rolling and the microphone and you're in their face like, what do you have to say for this? And you're like confronting them. I mean, that my heart is racing. I'm like so nervous in those situations, but after it's over, you're just like, that was pretty cool.
So what's your inner talk? What's your inner talk to get you to do that?
Oh my gosh.
Or do you not just have problems with it? You're like, yeah, I'll do it.
No, it takes a little bit of like amping up for me. I just have like a very specific set of questions that I know I want to ask. And so I just kind of go over in my head. Like I practice in my head, like what I'm going to say, what I'm going to lead with. And for me, I just have to remind myself, this isn't about me. I'm not going in as Danielle Waugh. I'm going in as a representative of the people. And I know that may sound kind of corny, but you have to remember what your objective is and what the story is and what change you're trying to bring about. So that's just what I try to remember, is like, this isn't about you. This is about the people that are relying on you to do a good job with this story.
Now, are you pumping poker face on your way up there?
probably like a whole playlist that's like pumping me up, right? A lot of like Lizzo that like is like very confident and self-assured.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I think you just kind of have to get in that mindset and you just have to kind of go for it.
Okay.
Now, do you enjoy the adrenaline rush after it's over? Like, do you like when you're done, you're like that, like you said, that was awesome. Like you enjoyed each time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I kind of like live for that. I think that the adrenaline rush of the job is like what keeps me going, because let's be real, like there are so many reasons why people leave this industry, because there are so many challenges, there are so many things that aren't great about it. But for me, like the adrenaline rush of covering breaking news, of bringing a story to the public's attention that is impactful, of doing these things kind of like on the edge, that's what keeps me going. It's like almost an addiction where it's just like, I love this so much. I could never work in a cubicle where I do the same thing day in and day out. I would be so bored. So I just need that kind of like, every day is an adventure kind of feeling.
Now, how does your...
It's why you start podcasts.
Yeah. How does your fiance feel about it? Has he ever told you like, you might want to slow down on that one, or that's a little dangerous, or...
Really, yeah, or does he come with you?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he's ever come with me. And that would be so distracting. No, I mean, I think, yeah, he's said a few times, like, be careful, but he loves supporting journalism. He is a news junkie himself. I think he really like, has a lot of respect for what we do. And so he's a huge supporter of my career, which I'm really fortunate for, because we move around a lot. We have a lot of crazy hours, and he's just so supportive of that. And so I couldn't do it without that support, honestly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how many times have you moved with being, you know, that's something that people don't think about, right? Like have you moved quite a bit then? Since 2011?
So I moved to Bangor, then to Lewiston. Then I moved twice in Portland, and now I'm here in West Palm. So 5 times in 8 years. Yeah. So
that's quite a bit.
Yeah. You get kind of used to moving, and you don't really like own a lot of stuff. So like all of my furniture, like he owns. I didn't come into this relationship with like anything. Like I didn't even really have like a bed. I mean, you just kind of get used to that lifestyle where you're just always kind of moving about, and you know, it keeps things interesting.
Danielle, hear me out. I feel like you should just get a van and just live the van life.
Yeah, the van life.
Yeah, I wouldn't be, it would have to be like a spacious van, but like I could do that.
Yeah, we had a couple of people on that lived out of a van. They did van life for about a year or so. And they were really open and honest about it, you know, because I don't know if you've ever followed van life people like on Instagram and stuff. They're
no.
always like, these people just travel around the country. They live out of their vans. And like, there's always like an awesome sunset on the beach, like with the back doors of the van open, or they're up in the mountains, you know, looking, you know, at the stars. They're like, and when they came on, we did the interview with them, and they said, there's a lot more like glowing Walmart signs than there is like beautiful sunsets.
Yeah. No, I actually like relate to that really hard, because I feel like people have that same vision of like news life, where it's like lights, camera, action. And like, you see the images of like very put together people on TV, but they don't realize that like, I don't get lunch breaks. Like when I do, it's at a gas station eating like old pizza. And most of my day is centered around like where I can find a bathroom wherever I am. So people don't really like see that side of it. And I just think, when you kind of pull the curtain, you see like the real non-glamorous part of it.
Yeah, what it's really like on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of people that when you're reporting, they're like walking behind you, like doing like funny, you know, is that very distracting?
Or inappropriate, things?
Okay. I hate it so much, but I almost hate to admit how much I hate it, because I don't want to give them that satisfaction of knowing they got under my skin. But I just think like, how dare you? Like, I'm here working. I don't walk into your office and get behind your face and like say ridiculous things. Like, it's just so disrespectful. And I wish people knew like how much it really messes with our day. Cause like, we usually have just a few minutes to shoot what we need to shoot. Like, we're going, we're on tight deadlines. And it's like, okay, I have 10 seconds to shoot this thing and you're going to ruin it by screaming. Like, it's, oh my God, it really bothers me. And I'm not sure if you're like familiar with this internet viral thing that was going around for a few years. I don't even want to say it. Like, it's just so vulgar.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's
an inappropriate phrase, right?
Yes.
That
and it's like,
once said,
yep.
It's not even like funny. Like, you're not original with this. Like, you're so lame. You're just repeating this thing. So, I really, really hate it. I really hate it. Yeah.
So, no, I can totally understand.
I guess I never really thought of it like that way. Like, you're right. Like, you have like a certain like deadline and you're only getting 2 minutes or, you know, a minute or whatever it is to shoot that one time. And for somebody to just come in, you know, it's almost like somebody just bringing a paintbrush after somebody's painted a masterpiece and just like wiping over it or something like that, you know?
It's super disrespectful and it really messes with you. And in some occasions, like, it makes you feel really unsafe because your back is to whatever is going on. Like, you're staring into the camera, you're in a very vulnerable position. Sometimes you're alone, and then you don't really know who's behind you and what they're up to and what their intentions are. And so, it's not a joke. It's not funny. And, it's gotten really upsetting in a few cases where I've actually had to call the cops on people. So I just wish people knew, like, we don't find it funny.
So that has happened.
Oh yeah. 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 Yep, people have gotten really aggressive. One time it was dark out. I was covering a protest, and it's kind of like, I'm there to convey your message. I am putting your message on TV. And so I would hope that you would look at the media in that scenario as your partner in this protest in a way, because we are getting your message out there. And right before I was going live on the air, you know, I have an earpiece in my ear and I'm concentrating on what the anchor is saying. I'm in that mindset of like, I'm about to go live. My cameraman is looking into the lens. He's not looking around. And I had protesters literally try and grab me and take the microphone out of my hand seconds before I went live on the air. And so I couldn't see what was going on behind me. I had to elbow somebody out of my live shot. And luckily it didn't come across on TV. Like, nobody watching that night knew what was going on just seconds before we went live. And it just made me so upset in that moment, because it's like, why are you treating me like this? I'm here to be of help to your cause.
That doesn't make
in
any sense.
Yeah. 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 And so it's just, you know, that was probably one of the worst times, but you know, for the most part, people don't act that way. And most days you don't come across that, but in the times that you do, it can really rattle you.
Yeah. Now, what is it about like yourself and your personality or that you feel like has you know, you said you wanted to be a journalist from, you know, when you were young. What do you think that has just like kept you so beelined? Like, was it, you know, was it mentors that you've had, or was it like, you know, something that you've just envisioned, or?
Yeah, I think for me, it's just feeling like a sense of purpose, in a sense of like what we do, I really believe in. And I couldn't do this if I didn't believe in it, if I didn't believe in the importance of journalism and the role that we play in the community and the role that we play in democracy. I just feel like we need good journalists. We need journalists that are doing this for the right reasons. And so that's what keeps me going. And just, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of it. I can't imagine changing a career at this point. It would take a lot for me to leave this job because I have put so much into it. And I think when you've made so many sacrifices to get to where you are, it becomes harder and harder to give it up in some ways. It's like, well, I put in all these hours. I sacrificed so much. I moved away from my family. I missed Christmas. I worked every weekend. You know, when you give up a lot to do what you love, then it becomes harder to just say, forget it. You know, let's just do something else. So I think, yeah, you know, I just want to stick with it and just keep seeing where this career takes me, because so far it's taken me to a lot of exciting places and a lot of unexpected things.
Yeah.
Well, all the cities that you mentioned, right? Like, who would have thought that you'd ever live in some of those cities, probably, right? Like, you probably would have never.
Yeah. And what I love about it is that you, I think a lot of us have preconceived notions about different parts of the country, and you think, oh, I could never live in this part of the country. I would hate to live there. And what I've found is that just give a place a chance, like just show up, get involved in the community, get to know people, join activities, join clubs, and you could love anywhere. I really believe that. I think you could learn to love just about anywhere, and you just have to get to know people. And that's the secret. So it's really opened my eyes to like different ways of life, different kinds of people. And I just think that, you know, we all have our differences, but when you focus on kind of common ground, you can really learn to love anybody and anywhere. So I just love that.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I truly believe that. I think that would be the best part of it, you know, because even on this podcast, we share very different views on a lot of stuff, you know, but between the three of us. But I feel like, you know, if you focus on what the common ground is, that, you know, you can learn to love, you know, and get along with most people, really.
I really believe that. I believe most people are good at heart, and you can learn a lot about yourself by putting yourself in these kind of strange environments too. Like, you can realize a whole different side of yourself you may not have really been in tune with. So I think that's pretty cool.
The only thing I would disagree with that statement was, I don't think I can still do the cold. Like,
no, here's the deal. Here's the
weather, the
deal.
It's going to keep me out of a lot of places.
You have to learn how to dress for it. That's the secret. Like, you can dress strategically to be okay. Trust me, you can. And I feel the same way about the heat. Like, when I'm down here in the really hot and humid weather, oh my God, like I really struggle in the heat down here. But you just learn to adapt. And humans are very adaptable creatures.
That's for sure.
So,
I have like flip-flops. Like, I weld in flip-flops. Like, I've got burns all over my legs and my feet, because like, if it's just like a small job or something, I'm like, I don't want to put boots on. I'm going to keep my flip-flops on because, you know, I live in flip-flops. So
does my fiance. He wears flip-flops like every day. And I always joke, like, he only breaks out real shoes in a special occasion. Like, if we're going out to a fancy dinner, like, then maybe no flip-flops. But like, the flip-flop lifestyle, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. Even like, you know, I try, it's been a year, well, 2 years now since COVID, but, I would go snowboarding every year. And like, when we get there, or, you know, if we go on an airplane or whatever, even like going, you know, to Denver or like driving to West Virginia, I have the flip-flops on all the way till I get there.
Wow.
And then I take them off and I'm like, okay, now it's time to put my snowboard boots on.
You do like the cold. If you go snowboarding, then you like the cold in some respects.
Well, yeah, 1 week a year.
Then, okay.
Then
then it's over.
Yeah, right. And I don't have to go to work in it. If I didn't have to go to work in it, I think it would be a different story.
Yeah.
Like, the guys, I see guys out there and I'm like, how are you going? Like, people are going to work and there's like 3 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah, I still remember my first time. So I growing up, I would always go from Florida to Texas. Like, my parents would migrate back and forth, right? So in summer, we'd go to Texas where it's hotter and then come back here in the wintertime. And so I got this job that I have now. And one of my first gigs was I had to travel to Minneapolis in the dead of winter. It was negative 42. And the plane still took off. We went. I only have a sweatshirt because I'm from Florida. So, and I didn't bother to buy another jacket. And I always, like, no matter what, I won't buy a big jacket. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm not doing it because it's just too much to carry. So, and plus I'm going in and out. It's fine. I remember getting off and immediately I felt my nose hairs.
Yes.
I was like, this is weird. Like, what is going on? Like, immediately I was like, that's how cold it is that you feel your nose hairs.
And
I was crazy.
They turn into little icicles. I think that the coldest thing that I ever felt was negative 23. I think that was the coldest I ever felt in Maine. I was doing a story about ice fishing season starting early because it was so cold. And I will just never forget it. I mean, my feet, my fingers, I mean, just instant numb. It was like there was nothing you could do but just, you know, survive it.
I can see that. Are you always on call? Like right now, could they be like, hey, I need you to go do this for a story, or is it not?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have an on-call schedule where we take turns being that go-to reporter for the weekend, for example. But, you know, I think that you have to always be in the mentality where it's like the news never stops. So you do, in a way, kind of always have to be plugged in, I think. Like, you just have to be aware of what's going on. So let's say, you know, something devastating happened, if there was a major emergency, you should always be reachable, I think. Like, you should always be a phone call away. And so I literally don't know what it's like to unplug. Like, I don't think I've done it ever. Yeah.
So going back to what you were talking about, like how you stayed on track, and what was interesting to me, like that you felt like this job has purpose for you. And I always wondered that, because I had no idea what I wanted to be. I probably changed career paths, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 times.
We finally figured it out.
Yeah, now I finally figured out I want to be a podcaster, because I like talking to people.
Yeah.
So, and Lord knows I've been blessed in way, way too many ways that, you know, I live a lifestyle far beyond my expectations as a child, but I never knew what I really wanted to do, you know? But I feel like when you find something that gives you purpose, it does definitely, it puts you on a beeline to like be able to stay on track. And I feel like there's a lot of, you know, graduating high school kids, and they don't know what they want to do per se, but I feel like they should look for something that gives them purpose, no matter what that is. You know, that could be purpose as a plumber, or, you know, a technician, or a news reporter, or a doctor, or whatever. I think you really, and my wife, I think, is a great example of it too. And I just probably really never thought about it, but she was in retail for 13 years before she became a teacher. And she took a significant pay cut to be a teacher, but it was that purpose that, you know, really drove it home for her. She wanted to be, you know, something that gave back to her community. That was more important than money to her. So yeah. I think as long as you do find that something that gives you purpose, it will keep you on track for sure. And that's a little enlightening for me.
I agree 100%. I mean, I don't think most people get into journalism because they want to make a lot of money. Like, secret is that we don't make a lot of money usually. And so you have to be willing to make those sacrifices and kind of see the big picture and get your satisfaction in other ways. And that's hopefully making a difference and being at the forefront of really exciting and historic events and interviewing important people and doing all of those things. You just kind of have to have that priority. And I also think that, you know, if I could give anybody any advice, if they don't really know what they want to do, I think you kind of have to take stock of what your talents are and just kind of get to know what you're good at, and then see if you can find a job that has that purpose, that also has that blend of the things that you're naturally good at. And I think it's the marriage of those two things that is the real sweet spot. It's finding things that you got a knack for, but also that, you know, give you that excitement every day. That is probably the best thing that you can try and do.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to ask you too. Who's your favorite news anchor of all time? Like, you had to pick one all time. Like,
it could. So I'll tell you, for me, like, I always found Dan Rather hilarious during the political races, like when election night. I thought it was just hilarious because, like, his sayings were, like, off the charts.
So, but I think mine is kind of along those same lines. I think Brian Williams is so talented. He just, like, things just roll off of his tongue. He's so smooth. He's funny. He's smart. But, you know, he really screwed up his career with his kind of, like, embellishing of his stories about, you know, military action. So that's a real shame, because I think that he was probably the best at what he did for his time. So he's still one of my favorites. I love watching him. He's really good.
Yeah. I mean, we were, but you know, at the same time, right? Like, he just made a mistake.
Right? I know.
It's a big one.
Yeah. And it's the kind of mistake that you can't make in this line of work, because your credibility is in your truth telling. Like, that's like what we do. That's our bread and butter, is telling the truth. And so if you, even in like a small way, if you screw that up, I mean, there goes your reputation.
You embellish that.
So how did you land your first job in reporting?
Applying everywhere, like literally everywhere. And that's the thing with this career, is that you don't really choose the job. Like, the job chooses you. And so you have to be willing to apply to many places, dozens, if not 100 some different stations. There's a website, it's a forum, it's called tvnewsjobs.com, I think. And basically, hiring managers just post their openings, and you scroll through and you sort it by market and you see what's out there. And then you either email the news director a link to your kind of highlight reel, or, you know, back when I was still breaking into the industry, we were actually mailing hard copies of DVDs. And so I was burning DVDs and going to my post office and writing in Sharpie, like, the name of the news director, and mailing it out, like, old school. And I probably mailed out at least 50 applications initially. And I think I heard back from, like, one or two places. And I was devastated. I was like, am I not good at this? Like, what's the problem here? And so I had a meeting with my professor at Syracuse, and I'm like, yeah, like, I've applied so many places. He said, how many have you applied to? And I said, about 50. He's like, oh, you've got to apply to a lot more. So that's the thing with this industry, is you just send out your application everywhere and you see where lightning strikes. I mean, the timing has to be right. The location, the station, the money in some regards. I mean, it just has to all line up perfectly. And I had, I think, two options when I was graduating: either move to Bangor, Maine, on one coast in one part of the country, or my other option was Yakima, Washington, which is like the clear other side of the country. Both small markets, both really rural. And for some reason, I just chose Bangor. Like, it was like something was pulling me there. And it was the smaller of the two markets. It didn't necessarily make sense, but something was just pulling me in that direction in a way that I can't explain. And I just said, I'm moving to Maine. And so I packed up a vehicle. I packed up my Ford Focus with literally nothing but clothes. Like, I'm telling you, I didn't own furniture. I had nothing. I just packed clothes in a car and drove, I think it was 13 hours from my home in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, where the house where I grew up in, to Bangor. I did not have an apartment lined up. I had no money in my bank account. Like, it was just, I got the job and off we go. And it was just, here's the adventure. It's beginning. So that's the story. It's just, you know, that's who wanted to hire me. And I said, yes, let's do it.
But that talks to like, it's almost like those stories that you hear of, like, the actor that's like, I'm going to LA. Mm-hmm. I have nothing, but I'm going. Right. It just talks to your conviction of what you're looking to do.
Versus, yeah. And like, it's not for everybody. Like, it's not, there's a lot of, you know, out of your comfort zone going on there, because you don't know a soul. Like, you don't have a friend. You don't have any family. You don't know anything. You have no frame of reference. It literally, you plop down in this strange place and it's just like, get started, go meet people, go get to know the community. And it's just such an adventure.
Yeah, so I guess that is true, right? So you get there, you immediately have to embed yourself because you have to get to know people.
And you weren't even engaged at that point, right?
No.
So you weren't even engaged. So you're going there completely by yourself. Nobody else with you.
What's a good tactic if you want to get to know someone?
If you want to get to know somebody, like in like a work context or like a friend context?
Just a stranger. Yeah. Work context. Like you just want to be like, hey, hi, you know, and I'm asking that for like folks out there who may be like shy, right? Like that, they need that extra like push. Like I have no problems just going out and be like, hey, you know, how you doing? And just talking to random people.
I feel like a lot of people have problems talking to people. Yeah. Like what's your go-to when you're just trying to get to know somebody?
I think just like leading with a compliment of some kind, like even if you don't really mean it, just being like, hey, I love your hat. Oh my God. Or, you know, just, I don't know.
People really like my hat.
I don't know. Just being nice. Like if you just smile at somebody, if you just kind of make eye contact with them, I always find that, you know, especially in a work context, meeting somebody face to face, like don't call them on the phone, don't send them an email. If you want something, if you want to talk to somebody, if you want to get something accomplished, you've got to knock on their door. You have to show up in person. You have to get to know them face to face because it's way too easy to ignore people these days. And you cannot say no to somebody's face as easily. So just, I don't know, showing up, being real, just not acting, I don't know, better than anybody, just like being yourself, being authentic. That's what I would say, but I think it's a skill and it's something that I think personally, I have to make a conscious decision to literally turn on because naturally I am not a super talkative person. I'm actually an introvert. I enjoy being quiet in my alone time, but if I'm at work, like I know that I need to be that person and I just have to make that decision to turn it on. And then after a while, I have to turn it off because it's just, it drains you. It takes a lot of energy on my part. But I'm much more comfortable going up to somebody in a work context because it's clear like what I want from them, what they want from me than in like a social setting. Like I am not the best social butterfly by any means. I think I could learn a lot from, you know, the people that do it the best, but that's just my take on it.
I would have thought just because you, like you said, you do like, you know, interviews where you're just, you know, walking up to somebody and starting an interview with them. I think, you know, personally that a social thing would be much easier than that. That's interesting to hear that.
I mean, I think because you're more vulnerable when it's a social situation, it's like, you know, do you want to be my friend? Like that's a much more vulnerable position to be in. Like, do you really like me? So I think like in a work context, it's like, this is business. Like this isn't personal and I need this from you. You need this from me. It's like a transaction in some ways. I actually think that introverts are very good journalists. I think a lot of people assume we're all very extroverted, but when you're introverted, you're a deep thinker. You really listen to people, which is the key in this job, I think, is being a good listener and trying to understand different people's perspectives. So, you know, I think there's something to be said for being a little bit more quiet and more of a listener.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, listen, Daniel, I definitely don't want to keep you all night. I feel like we could for sure because you've been, you know, awesome. And I really appreciate you coming on. But as one of our questions that we do have our final question is based on your life experiences, is there any type of wisdom that you can impart on our listeners?
So you kind of gave me a preview of this question, so I had a chance to think about it. I think that my advice overall is like, go for it. Go for it. Don't wait for the right time because in some situations you will never feel ready to do something and there will always be a reason to have an excuse not to do something. But if there's something in life that you want and if there's a dream that you have or if there's something, an opportunity in front of you, literally just go for it. You know, you can be afraid, you can be nervous about things, but life is an adventure and you've just got to put yourself out there because if you don't, you'll probably regret it. And hey, if it's great, then that's great. If it doesn't work out, then you learned something and you had an experience to grow from. But don't be afraid to try something new and literally pick up and move wherever you're heart takes you, and you know, you just never know what can happen. So go for it is my advice.
Solid advice.
Absolutely. And last but not least, where can people find you?
Oh, well, you can just Google my name because I don't have a very common name. So just Google Danielle Waugh, W-A-U-G-H, and you'll find my website, my Twitter account, my Facebook. Yeah, just connect with me on social media. I'd love to get to know anybody out there.
And they can find you on CBS 12, the Wonder
Turn.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. There's that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So Channel 12, the CBS affiliate in West Palm Beach, Florida. And you can find me there. And yes, we are the One, Two, Turn, Two. So that was one of the first things I learned on the job was this little.
All right. Did you ever watch, you know what, I got to ask you another question. So did you ever watch the Howard Stern movie?
Not like in its entirety.
WNBC. Like when he's like going through, okay.
I was kind of like, I was a kid when that came out. Yeah. Like, I think my parents watched it and they told me, like, this isn't appropriate for you. So
it's inappropriate, but it was great. It was great. Anyway, all right. Sorry.
All right, guys. As always, if you've got any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fullgorillalife@gmail.com. Make sure you check out our social media at fullgorillalife on Instagram and Facebook, and at GorillaFull on Twitter.
With two L's. And last but not least, please hit subscribe on your podcast app of choice, and please visit our website, fullgorilla.life. Ladies and gentlemen, and Danielle, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's a wrap. So fun.
Thanks, guys. Later.